Good morning. This is our first talk in 2020. In 1959, I never could have imagined, as I was walking down the sidewalk as a kid, I never could have imagined the year 2020. Seemed like something out of a Ray Bradbury or Arthur C. Clarke or Jules Verne novel. Yet here we are. And so I would like to wish everyone a happy new self, because as we have learned by studying this book, Leave Your Nets, like the song says, if nothing changes, nothing changes. So we must have a change in consciousness. What does a change in consciousness really mean? It means a change in what we are aware of. Now, before we get going on this next chapter, which is called Awake, Thou That Sleepest, and also has to do with a new awareness, I have a little correction to make. Last week, or the week before, sometime or other, during this series, I mentioned that my copy of Leave Your Nets was published in 1964, and I hadn't seen any others any earlier, and so I assumed that it had to be published after Joel had passed, but that's not true. And Susan corrected me, and she sent me an email that says, I just read in the Across the Desk section at the end of the first chapter of the 1959 Infinite Way letters this. This is a quote from Joel. When Leave Your Nets was published, I thought that that one printing would last forever because certainly only the most advanced students would want it or would be able to understand and appreciate it. He says, now only a few hundred copies remain, and after this present edition has been exhausted, Leave Your Nets will be out of print for a year or more, because there are so many books in preparation which have precedence over this one. So, if he's saying that in 1959, something must have been published in 1958. But it goes back even farther than that, because this caused me to do some research, and I found a publishing company called, and this is an interesting name, the publishing company is called Thoughts. That Inspire Galleries. Thoughts That Inspire Galleries. That's the publishing company. And they published Leave Your Nets in the USA in 1953. 1953. That's interesting to me because I believe The Art of Meditation was sometime around 1954. Anyway, Leave Your Nets, which is a very advanced book, and he admits it. Leave Your Nets came out. The first one I could find was 1953. So, it has taken many, many years for those of us on the Infinite Way path to become ready to hear what this book has to say, what the consciousness of this book has to say. And it always comes down to that word consciousness. And I love what Joel said either last week or this one. I'll find out if I read it to you. He said, consciousness is what you're conscious of. All right, so if a spiritual consciousness sets you free from a material sense of self, then being conscious of a spiritual universe or being aware of a spiritual self is what begins to dissolve the material sense of universe and self. So let's get into this consciousness, into this consciousness that spoke these words and wrote them to students. Chapter 11. Awake, thou that sleepest. The new dimension is the revelation of a presence and power that cannot be defined by human thought, and which ordinarily is not brought into play in human experience, except by those who have caught the vision of a spiritual universe. And so there you have it right there. The new dimension is not brought into play unless you have an awareness of a spiritual universe. It's all about consciousness, what you're aware of. And it's coming to me more and more that Joel's right when he said consciousness is the single most important word in the infinite way. That which you are consciously aware of is your consciousness. Okay, now the best example I have of how that works is when I first moved up here to the mountains some 23 and a half years ago, I bought a Subaru all-wheel drive so we could get around in the snow and go get groceries and stuff, even though there was snow and ice and sleet. And I had never seen a Subaru on the road before, never noticed one. But when I went down and bought this car and drove it, well, it was wonderful. I loved it. And I drove it until it was paid off and then got something else. But the point is that when I brought it home, suddenly I saw Subarus everywhere. I went to the grocery store. There was one or two in the parking lot and one driving by on the street. I went on the road on the way home and saw one or two pass me. Where did all these Subarus come from? Until I saw one and held one and drove one, it wasn't in my consciousness, now was it? But once it entered my consciousness, it became a reality everywhere. And this is the same with these spiritual principles. We think we have to struggle and eke out a living out of an unfriendly universe. And as long as that's what we're seeing, that's exactly what's true. That's the universe we live in. And it's terrible. It's a struggle. It's unfriendly. It's mean. It's dangerous. But what happens as we begin to practice some of these principles? Wait a minute. Now wait. As we saw last week, God's grace is my sufficiency. And he says, you ask yourself, can that be true? Have I been living all these years struggling for a living when his grace is my sufficiency? Well, if that's true, how do I live so that I can have that grace? Well, first I live that way by remembering the principle. God's grace is my sufficiency and contemplating it. Then that contemplation leads to meditation where I feel an inner movement. And if it doesn't lead to some sort of experience, some sort of awareness, if your meditation doesn't lead to a silence, an absence of mental activity, that is personal mental activity, to the point where you become aware of a movement or a presence or a feeling, then you need to go back and study the art of meditation and how to do it. Because this is vital. This is how we grow. This is how we change. Because in our meditation, we become aware. And so our consciousness becomes aware. We have spiritual consciousness, if only for a moment. Then we go about our business and we see these coincidences happening. Doors open by themselves. Harmony comes to us. Abundance comes to us. And we know we didn't do it. All we did was sit down in our chair or on our couch or next to the pool and had a meditation. And several meditations. So slowly we become aware of a spiritual presence that really does provide for our needs. Oh, my God. How long has this been here? Just like the Subaru. It's been here forever. You've been somewhere else. So you see, it's all about consciousness. It's all about making a change in your awareness. And this book and this chapter says, you cannot experience the new dimension except if you have caught the vision of a spiritual universe. See, the new dimension isn't moving. It's your consciousness. He says, the thinking of the average human being does not penetrate the realm of the spirit. His entire life, his reasoning faculties, and his awareness remain in a three-dimensional world, a world that can be thought about and known only by the senses. So, if you can think about it, it's not God. If you sit down in your meditation and you're thinking, that's fine if you're having a contemplation, but the only purpose for it is to settle down, be at peace, and stop thinking. And be open and receptive to whatever comes in that's new into your consciousness, some sort of new awareness. And you cannot think about God. The human mind can't think about something that's infinite. But the human mind can contemplate scripture that it was spoken by somebody that had the awareness and can contemplate. What did he mean by that? How do you do that? How do I apply this? And that contemplation leads to a moment of the still small voice, the quick short breath. I heard something. I felt it. I know I did. How do you know if it's real? Not your imagination. We discussed that already. By the fruits. Some form of harmony will appear that you didn't put together. It's put together by the temple not made by hands. It's put together as a temple not made by hands. A temple of abundance, a temple of companionship, temple of life, health. You see? All right, so he says the entire human world is made up of pictures. You need to pay attention to this. This next little bit here is really the new horizon in two paragraphs. The entire human world is made up of pictures, sometimes good and sometimes bad. And there you go. If you see something good, that's just as much an illusion as something bad. Well, what do I mean by that? Do I mean that you can't enjoy this abundance that's come to you? No, I don't mean that. When I first became aware that abundance was my inheritance, it started showing up in the most unusual places, coming to me from the universe, throughout the universe. And I took a part of it and took a plane ride to Hawaii and thoroughly enjoyed it. Enjoyed the beaches, oh, that sound of the water just lapping up against the shore quietly. It's wonderful. The water's warm. I laid down on a chaise lounge and watched the palm trees fray or sway and felt the trade winds. Oh, just wonderful. And then I traveled around the other side of the island and visited with Herb Fitch and his wife, his first wife, Betty. It was wonderful. There's nothing wrong with that. So see, what is the difference then? What is the difference in abundance or wealth or life or companionship that comes from the invisible, formed by the conscious awareness of spirit, and the good that you have out here that, let's say, you yourself put together? What is the difference? Well, the good that you put together, you will find you are attached to. You don't want somebody to take it away or something to happen to it. And it's the reverse of evil. The evil that you experience, you say to yourself, I don't want this. I need to change this, which means you want to change it to good. But there's another universe, another dimension in which you don't do anything but remain receptive and then do as you're told to do, whatever is put in front of you, whatever is indicated as God's will for you. In that universe, the good is forever. Now, I don't mean that I live in Hawaii forever. Oh, I could. In fact, I was going to move there once upon a time, but the fellow that went before me had different ideas and went to India, so that didn't come about. But the point I'm making is, it's not good in the sense of human good. It's good in the sense of, I have it now, a principle. I have it. It's eternal. I will never forget God's grace is my sufficiency in all things. And this abundance is His. It's Him appearing. What a difference. That I'm not attached to. It comes and it goes, and it comes and it goes, and it flows in and out. And it never stops. It never dries up. All right, so His good is forever. This temporary good that we manufacture and put together and then struggle to hang on to, this is the opposite of the evil that we struggle to get rid of. Both of these make up the picture called a material universe. So he says, the entire human world is made up of pictures, sometimes good and sometimes bad, and of the reactions that come to a person from what he beholds with the five physical senses and with the reasoning mind. Elsewhere, it might be in the Art of Meditation, Joel says, man can do everything with his reasoning mind, but with the reasoning mind, he cannot know God. That's a tough one. We want to go into meditation and know these things intellectually and rest back and have a little moment of quiet and then go on about our business, and nothing happens, nothing changes. Why? Because we never entered the higher awareness. It was just an intellectual, a mind awareness. You've got to come up higher, and you do that by practicing contemplation, which should lead to a moment of silence. Then you come up higher. You're lifted up. You don't do it. All right, so he says, the few who penetrate the veil and see into the spiritual real discover that there is another power and presence that is neither power nor presence in the human sense of understanding. You see? The human mind cannot know God. Now, yes, the natural man receiveth not the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness unto him. Neither can he know them, because they are spiritually discerned. Now that's a long way of saying, or maybe I took the long way of saying that you have to come up higher. Your intellectual understanding of all of this truth, no matter how good it is, even if you're able to sit down and pass a written test on all of these truths and how they work, it will do you no good unless it leads to a period of meditation, and that leads to a moment of silence. And then, without any effort on your part, you do not have to work that hard. You are lifted. You're lifted above that mind that can only know ideas and thoughts and theories. And you're lifted into a state of awareness. And for a moment, for a second, you catch a glimpse. There is a spiritual universe. They were right. Yes. And now you're seeing it. So what's happened? You've had a change in consciousness. You've had a change in what you're aware of. You're beginning to grow spiritually. Congratulations. Well done. So he says, to material sense, it is not a presence because it is not outlined form. It is not power because it does not overcome or govern other powers. Yet, it is a presence in the sense that the spiritually illumined feel it. They sense it, cognize it, and are aware of it, even while it has no actual form, outline, color, or dimension. It is a power because its very presence reveals harmony, even where discord, disease, or sin may have been. Now, there's really a sentence that I love, because I have never been able to feel God as power. Never. Even when I've seen it dissolve things, it didn't feel like power to me. And that's because power has always meant one nation overthrows another nation. Right? Or this man wrestles another one to the ground. Or this one outboxes that one. It's one over another. Right? It's one person or one nation or one being that overcomes or governs or rules other powers. And I've never felt God in that way. Never. I've just never been able to feel it. So, when he says it's a power because its very presence reveals harmony, ah, yes, now that I can agree with. In the situations that I found myself in the past, like the night I was almost stranded in downtown Dallas, and the car wouldn't start, and I was on the highway, the engine just shut off, and I was lucky to coast over to the side. Well, that was certainly a discord, wasn't it? Certainly a lack and a limitation. I only had $80 in my pocket, and it was the 4th of July weekend. Now what? Everything's closed. Well, when I got quiet and I meditated after I settled myself down from panicking, I got quiet, I meditated, I contemplated a few scriptures that helped me to become still, things that have been revealed to me, as well as scriptures in the Bible or other places, and they helped me settle down, and I settled down, I got quiet, I became still, and I listened. I knew that if I could catch that awareness, if my consciousness could open up to the awareness of the Spirit, something would change. I knew that harmony would appear. That's all I knew. I didn't know how. For all I knew, it could have been somebody pulled up behind me, "Do you need a lift?" and took me to town and gave me some money for a hotel, and I stayed there until I got my car towed and repaired or something, you know. I didn't know how it was going to happen. But from practice, I knew it was going to happen. If I touched that Spirit in awareness, it's not like reaching out and touching something. It's you settle down into silence and suddenly you feel the movement. Suddenly you're aware of Spirit or the spiritual universe. And then after that happened, on the third attempt of trying to start, it started. And I drove all the way to Los Angeles. And the man there who looked at it said, "There's no way. The brain of this thing is fried. You couldn't have driven that way." Well, I changed the subject, you know, because you don't like to have to explain this to people. So I changed the subject, and he went right along with my new subject. All right, so the point is, what is the point? The point is that it's a power because its very presence reveals harmony even where discord is. Right? Now, the whole thing can be summed up like this, and we've said it many times, but I'm coming more and more to be convinced of it. You're standing in a spiritual universe, but you're living in your mind and your senses, and your mind and your senses show you a material universe. Sometimes good, sometimes bad, most of the times bad, try and make it into good. Sometimes you catch good for a week or a few days, and then it's back to bad in some area, and you have to go to work again. Back and forth, back and forth. That's what the temple made by mind, by reason, by senses brings you. Bad awareness. Oh, there's nothing wrong with it. People have lived in it for centuries. But if you're like me and you're really tired and you want to come home, you want to awaken, like this chapter says, awake thou that sleepest, and you want to, then you're willing to look in a different direction. You're willing to listen to these strange words that say you're standing already in a spiritual universe. You're willing to listen to a strange man who got on a cross and was nailed to the cross and passed away in front of everybody and appeared a few days later walking around talking. Showed you that even death is one of these temples made by mind. So if you're like me, you say, well, how do I get out of this? How do I become aware? And so we start the journey, and there's a specific path. We practice the presence. We add meditation in. We start with contemplation. We learn how to be silent. We start to feel that inner spirit, that fizz, as our friend Joe likes to say. We start to feel something. We become aware. Our awareness moves away from just a material sense and a reasoning mind, and moves into an awareness of spirit. Sometimes the awareness is drastic and huge, even infinite. Don't let that scare you. It's not going to stay there like that. You'll come back to normal. So enjoy it and say thank you, Father, and move on. If you're to have it again, you will. I think I'm talking to myself here. All right, so I just felt that very presence that I'm talking about, that spirit. That means my awareness right now is of the spiritual kingdom and the spiritual self, and the spiritual presence. Let me sit in it for a minute, and I'll be back. I'm just going to rest back. God is. All right, so he says, this three-dimensional world, which is called the human or material world, really is only a false concept of the real and is never destroyed. It is seen through. Yes, underline that. Well, he put it in italics, so he thought it was important too. Or maybe that was Lorraine. But anyway, it's in italics. This three-dimensional material world is only a false concept of the spiritual world. And it is never destroyed. You see, God's not a power like that. It is never destroyed. It is seen through. It's in my meditation that I become still enough to see through into the spiritual realm, into the fourth dimension. In other words, there is in reality no such thing as a physical, mortal, material universe. Well, there you have it. Mr. Joel Goldsmith, he preferred just Joel. Joel says, there's no such thing as a material universe. Well, I've been living here for 50 or 60 or 70 years. Yes, you've been living in the wrong universe. Now it's time. And if you have ears to hear, you can feel the Christ say, awake, thou that sleepest. You feel it on the inner plane. You know it's calling you. It's calling you. Wake up. The only universe that exists, he says, is the spiritual, real world of God's creating. Yes, it's the temple not made by mind. It's the temple made by spirit, eternal in the heavens. And he says the proof of this is that the moment a degree of inner vision is awakened, and that's what we've been talking about, the world of God's creating becomes the only real world, and the mortal concept begins to lose reality and to disappear. Now that's the whole thing right there. We've just got the whole thing in the last two pages, and we can all go home. Really, if we practice this, we can go home now. Figuratively and in reality, we can come home to the real universe. Okay, now he talks about initiation. Why? Because that's what's happening. If you hear my voice and you know what I'm talking about, and you're not like, huh? What's he talking about? I better go back and study that. If you hear it and you go, oh yes, this is true, then you are in the middle of an initiation. You are initiated into the spiritual realm while standing right here, or sitting, or laying, or driving, or flying, or swimming, everything. I felt it up at 30,000 feet, and I felt it in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean on a cruise ship. I felt it in Hawaii, in Mexico, in Canada, in all across the United States, in the Bahamas, in Puerto Rico, in Haiti, everywhere that I've been. The final test, well, he talks about initiation, and he says that you're being initiated, and you are if you understand this. No, that's the wrong word, not understand. If you're experiencing this, you're being initiated. Why? Because you yourself asked for it. Somewhere or another you said and you meant it, oh God, help me. And you meant that, and I meant it. And you know, I heard an Irish guy say one time, no prayer of despair is ever unanswered. And maybe that's true. So we ourselves asked for it, and now here we are, we're being initiated into a new existence, a new self. A self that doesn't live out from the mind and the senses and the reason, a self that lives out from the invisible, a self that's motivated from the Father flowing through, a self that sees a spiritual kingdom. So he says these initiations are happening, and the final test is that of being faced with death in some form, such as being brought to the brink of a cliff and being told, and of course one must be obedient, to jump off the cliff onto the rocks or the waters beneath. Now, I wonder if my first spiritual teacher, Don, had read this, because I can remember sitting in his back room, and we were both had a cup of coffee, and he said to me, you know, eventually you'll be brought to the place where you're at a cliff, and you look down and it's thousands of feet below, and the voice inside of you will say, walk. And he says, you will walk. You will take a step forward, and then you'll realize, wow, I'm in the middle of the air, you know. And if you don't start thinking, oh my God, I might get hurt, and go back into material thinking, if you just trust those everlasting arms, you'll walk right across to the next cliff. The cliff, Joel says, is so high and the rocks so jagged, there's no hope of survival. And yet, people are alive in the Brotherhood, so some of them must have made it. There is a test which each one within himself must decide to take or not. Needless to say, anyone who is obedient and jumps off the cliff automatically becomes a member of the spiritual brotherhood, which is simply those who can see the spirit. Now, those who survive the final test are admitted to the brotherhood, but something far greater happens to them than becoming a part of a spiritual order. They learn the great secret that all human experience is illusion, and that the conditions they have been tempted to see and believe did not exist anywhere in the realm of the real. Today, we are the initiates, and right now we are taking the degrees of brotherhood, okay? So, you are being initiated, but you started it. You asked. On the next page, he says, the human mind cannot pierce the veil of material sense. Now, there you have it. And I bring that up again and again because it was a real struggle with me. I first came into the book Practicing the Presence at the age of 16. I saw it on somebody's shelf and it kind of called to me. But I opened it and I saw the word Christ and I thought, oh no, another religious book, and I closed it and put it back on the shelf. I was having a lot better time, I thought, with the drugs I was taking. Remember, this was in the 60s. So I had to go for a while, and then, strangely enough, my first teacher, when I met him, he gave me a book. He said, here, you should read this. And it was called The Art of Meditation. So you see, the infinite way was finding me. But in all honesty, I remember crying out to God. God, help me. There's got to be an answer, something better than what I see. So we're being initiated, and you are being initiated. And what I found out in the early days was no matter what I knew intellectually, no matter how much of the art of meditation I had memorized, no matter what principles I could spout out at you, I did not have the consciousness. I did not have the change in consciousness, only the covering up, sort of like putting paint on an old house that former paint is peeling off, and you just paint right over it. It's not going to last. It's not any good. You know it's going to fall off. Well, that's what I was doing. I was painting over this miserable human self. Very smart. High IQ. But unable to experience God. I couldn't experience God. I didn't know if it was real. And here I am reading The Art of Meditation and trying to practice the principles. It wasn't until that night at 3 o'clock in the morning when I cried out, God, Spirit, Jesus, Christ, Buddha, anyone, anywhere, show me how to live. Ah, that was when the intellect surrendered, stepped aside, admitted defeat. And I, inside of myself, became teachable. And the prayer was answered. And I began to experience God until that evening, a month or two later, reading the Practicing the Presence in my meditation chair, and I closed the book and closed my eyes, and suddenly I felt a movement, a presence. And God became real as an experience, no longer an idea. So I know when he says the human mind cannot pierce the veil of material sense, he is right. It's only as you come out from the hypnotism that by divine grace you receive enough light to know that you have been hypnotized and are thus enabled to disregard the experiences that you have gone through. You see, the faculty, he says, that enables one to pierce the veil, it's not the human mind, The faculty that enables one to pierce the veil, to see through the illusion, is the Christ. And Christ being infinite, I know you cannot move the Christ. If you find this absence of self in your meditation, oh yes, Christ can move you. And Christ will move you. It will lift you. Again and again, I have had the experience with my eyes open, I've had the experience in meditation, and I've had the experience in my dreams. That's why I had that dream about being lifted up. Several times. There is a universe of harmony. Here. Now. And we may enter it at will. Because there is no other universe. All that is necessary to behold it is a tiny measure of that touch, that Christ consciousness. So the question comes to us, how do we attain the ability to see through the illusion and to know that it is safe for us to jump? And the answer is that you already have the first seed of the illumination. Yes, the fact that you turn to God means that you somewhere within know there's a God. Now, how do you do it? Well, we've been over and over and over it. I suggest you get a copy of The Art of Spiritual Healing and you focus on and read and study and contemplate the chapter, What Did Hinder You?, where he says specifically, for years, I knew that the problem was hypnotism, but I could not find a way to break the hypnotism. No, he couldn't, not working from the mind. But then it was revealed, see, that's not the mind. There was a movement, something revealed to him, that all we had to do was come to see that this was impersonal nothingness, and give it any word you want. He says that. Hypnotism, mesmerism, mental images, it doesn't matter. Just so you understand it to be a nothingness, and then drop it. Rest back in the word, and you're perfectly free to say to yourself, Thy grace is my sufficiency, or I rest in thee, or Father, reveal thyself. Whatever helps you to become still and silent. And if you read that chapter, he says, we become aware of something that's not of this realm. We become aware of a spiritual presence. And the spiritual presence reveals the kingdom here and now. So that chapter is very important. I studied it quite a bit. He says, the greater your ability to relax and to understand that you are not on this path of your own choice or by your will, but that a seed was planted in you and it is sprouting, the more you can realize that and just step aside and let it take its normal course, the more quickly will you awaken to the spiritual real. The awakening is an act of grace. It is an act of God for which you have no personal responsibility. Well, you do have some responsibility, and so on the next page he says, where then is your responsibility? Your responsibility is to be normal and natural and add in that meditation and perhaps studying the art of spiritual healing, the chapter What Did Hinder You?, and studying the chapters we're reading here, and contemplating. The way I read a chapter is I come to a... paragraph like this that says, stop looking at sick and sinful and lacking man. You're not going to improve them. Illumination is going to dissolve them. And the greatest part of that illumination is the realization that only God can do that. So whatever leads us to what I'm feeling right now, which is this invisible presence called Christ or Father or God or it or I or is, but what you call it's not important. That you're aware of it is what's important, and you rest in it. You rest in it, and it dissolves the mental image and reveals the spiritual real, the spiritual universe, the spiritual man, the spiritual woman, spiritual house, not made by hands. We must see beyond the appearance world and look at it always from God's side. Now that's another helpful tool. When you sit down into your meditation, you can say to yourself, okay, I see from this side the problem, the lack and the limitation, but what is it from God's side? Let me be still. Father, what do you see? And if you're state is really one of receptivity and not thinking, something will be revealed. And you will see it from another side, from the spiritual side. So he says, herein lies the secret of dehypnotization. Look out from God's side and be sure that you have caught a glimpse of God. Well, that's all there is to it. But getting there from being intellectual is quite a journey. All right, we'll speed up a little bit because I'm running out of time. Whatever the illusion appears to be, you will find God to be the destroyer of it. But I don't like destroyer. I like dissolver because he reveals harmony and the illusion dissolves. It just evaporates. There's no power over it. As you realize this, personal responsibility drops away, and you know that you do not have to struggle for enlightenment, or as it was told to me, you do not have to work that hard. It takes only one who has the light and sees behind the human scene to the spiritual scene. There is no solution to the human scene through human means. There is no solution to the human scene except waking up to the real scene. You get it? The solution lies in the spiritual means. As you begin to see that man whose breath is in his nostrils is not a reality, but an illusion, and that actually there stands the Christ, you will begin to see a change. See? You will see a change because you caught the first glimpse of spiritual light. Again, when you see this universe from the standpoint of Christ as individual being, when you look through the appearance to the reality, and remember that's what he told us, it doesn't have to be overcome, it has to be seen through. This is all about what you see. It's all about awareness. It's all about consciousness. When you look out through the appearance to the reality, letting every opinion, thought, and conviction come from God, then the world will begin to come to you in this new dimension. Since you and I are of the household of God, and we have caught a glimpse, at least, of true being, we are the ones who must do this in our own way. This chapter this week, I don't know, I'm feeling the presence so much. Would that I could just give you that. Our greatest concern must be a concern for our responsibility. Can I do enough? Will I do enough? Will I measure up? You will not measure up, but neither will you fail. You are the instrument through which the Christ is finding entrance. You see how different that is? It's not up to you going within and knowing the truth. That's only a step. That's only a tool. That's only a way whereby you can use effort to become effortless. It's just a way, a tool, where you can get quiet, be still, and then the knowing will follow. So, you are but the instrument through which the Christ is finding entrance into human consciousness. That is what you are. That is what we are. We are the instruments now being used by the divine consciousness, and you are lifted up. You don't know the truth and make it, force it to work for you. You admit, I don't know anything, or my life would be better, no matter what I've read and memorized and thought about. So now let me be still. For the first time, Father, reveal thyself. I am listening. And then you're lifted up. There's a movement. Christ is upon you. And you can't do anything but rest. All right, so no one who has worked with the principles of the infinite way for any length of time will ever again be quite as hypnotized as he was before. Once we have beheld the very presence of the Christ, or experienced its activity, how can that leave us untouched? How can that leave us where it found us? And it can't. You have a change of consciousness. We have caught a glimpse of the greatest truth ever revealed, and that is that the appearance world is not a world to be destroyed, but to be seen through, not feared, not hated, not battled, seen through in its nothingness, in the illusory nature of its fabric. But you telling yourself, this is nothingness, 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 that's not what's being said here. That's not the truth. That's statements about the truth, and it won't work. If it helps you to be still, fine, use it. But that's not the thing. The real thing is when that movement comes, the Spirit is upon you, and then it dissolves and harmony is revealed. Ah, now you know it's nothingness. You've seen it with spiritual vision. In the degree that this light penetrates consciousness, in that degree do the illusory pictures of sin, disease, death, lack, and limitation, war, volcanoes, and earthquakes, and all the other evils of human existence disappear from off the face of the earth, because they never existed as reality. Their only existence was the same as the initiate's experience in the Brotherhood, one of hypnotism. Isn't that fantastic? It's the greatest thing ever revealed. When those periods of temptation to believe in some particularly evil, overpowering appearance come, and come they do, and come they will, be alert. Yes, why do they come? Because world thought is pumping them out. And we're receptive to that when we're not receptive to God. So we feel a little scratchiness in our throat, and we don't know where that's coming from. We go home, we turn on the TV, and they report, in our area, there's an epidemic of the flu. We didn't even go around anybody. How could that be? Because world thought is pumping that out, and it's subliminal. Well, what do? Do you fight it? No, you don't battle. You don't have to work that hard. When you become aware of that little scratchiness in your throat, you practice the principle. You turn within. You say whatever you need to say to become still. Same as I did in my car on the highway with 18-wheelers rolling by and the rain coming down. Okay. I know. If I feel this movement of the Spirit, this appearance will dissolve. So let me not work on the appearance or look at it or do anything with it or think about it, because it's a nothingness. So now, Father, reveal thyself and become so still, so quiet, so listening, so receptive, so floating, that you feel the movement. And that's how you practice. And then you get up, you go about your business, and it's nighttime or tomorrow, and you say, wait a minute, where did that scratchiness in my throat go? I forgot all about it. The meditation was so good, I forgot about it. And it's gone. Remember, quickly, you are not dealing with the appearance as it seems to be. You are dealing with an appearance that has no substance and no law. It cannot do any harm. In the measure of your quick response will your freedom come from the fear, the doubt, and the delay in the realization of good. All right, so this chapter is all about awakening. Your solution, your answers to any problem you've ever had or have now, or that someone's bringing to you, or that your nation is presenting. Your solution to that is to change your awareness from looking at that universe to looking at the spiritual universe. And this you cannot do. Isn't that something? This you have to do, but this you cannot do. Strange, a paradox. There are a lot of paradoxes on the spiritual path. Yes, you must see the spiritual universe, but this you cannot do with your mind. So you have a little talk with yourself. Well, I sure don't like this picture. But Joel says there is no material universe. So what am I doing trying to fix it? Let me become still. Let me take my hands off. Let me let the spirit be upon me. And you're quiet. You listen, Father. Reveal thy universe. Christ, reveal thyself. One with God is a majority, and I and my Father are one. The Father within is my life without. The two are one. I thought they were separate. But they're not. Not anymore. Not now that I am quiet and listening. No, I am coming to see all that the Father is, I am. All that the Father has, I have. I and the Father are one spiritual self, spiritual universe, spiritual awareness, and so I rest. He that seeth me seeth him that sent me. God the Father is God the Son. And the Word becomes flesh. And we behold the glory of the Christ of God. Be ye still, O little mind. And ye shall know the movement of God. Be still and know I am God. And behold, I make all things. things new. I make unto you a new self. And so, my friends, happy new self.